Dr. William Luther Pierce on Hope for the Future, 1997.
Hello. When I talk with people in the United States about the problems our country is facing and about the need to organize everyone of goodwill into an effective force for dealing with these problems, the most common complaint I hear is people don't care, or people are afraid to talk about the real problems. They just want to complain, but as soon as you start talking about doing something, they become frightened. In other words, the people I talk with tell me, white Americans are like ostriches with their heads in the sand, hoping that things won't get much worse if they just pretend not to notice what's happening and don't think too much about it. Now, that's partly true, but there are many different types of white Americans, and not all are afraid to face the real problems in this country. Let's take a look at some of these different types. First, let's note that there are a great many white Americans who do care about what's being done to our country and our people. Some of them are afraid to talk about it, but others are not. Some are confused about what's happening, but others have a pretty good understanding. It's also true, of course, that many Americans don't care. There are millions of couch potatoes, of Joe and Jill six-packs, of sports fans, of disco-goers, of trendy airheads who believe whatever they see and hear on TV and try to learn all of the latest clichés and imitate all of the current fads. As long as their refrigerators are full, their brains will be turned off. But white Americans today are not much worse in this regard than other people at other times. Most people always have been like that, without initiative or imagination or curiosity or independence. Let's not concern ourselves with them now. Later, when their refrigerators are empty, we'll see what can be done with them. Let's look now at the Americans who do care. Let's look at the ones who are observant enough to know that something is wrong and are responsible enough to be concerned. That's probably a good half of the adult white population. The question is, why aren't more of them doing something about their concern? We know that Bill Clinton was elected to his second term as president with the votes of only 23% of the electorate, fewer than one in four. Of course, some of the other 77% voted for Bob Dole or Ross Perot, but two-thirds of this other 77% said, in effect, to hell with the whole business. I'm not voting for any of those clowns. Now, that's something. That's a new record for voter alienation. That's a clear sign that a substantial portion of the population is fed up. It's a real reason for hope. And it's no wonder that the controlled media have not had much to say about the election statistics. But the question remains, why aren't the people who are fed up doing more than simply choosing not to play the game any longer? I know that many of them are too frightened to do anything. They're afraid of the government, which they have come to realize is no longer an institution to serve the people, but instead has become a dangerous and powerful enemy of the people. Do you remember the FBI's response to the terror bombing at the Atlanta Olympics last year? The FBI didn't have a clue as to who the bomber was, so they fingered the security guard who had found the bomb, Richard Jewell, told the media that he was their prime suspect because he was a heterosexual white male with an interest in firearms, and then, during the next few months, proceeded to ruin the poor man's life, hoping that some evidence might turn up to implicate him or that he might crack under the pressure. Eventually, they had to admit very grudgingly that they had made a mistake. Perhaps you saw the televised news conference held by Jewell and his lawyers after that. I saw it on the NBC Evening News, and I remember one of Jewell's friends who made a very moving statement at the conference. He said that he realized that living in the sort of country the United States has become is inherently dangerous. He said he realized that he could be killed by a terrorist bomb at any time. But, he said, after seeing what the FBI had done to his friend Jewell and the way they had done it, he was far more afraid of the FBI than he was of terrorists. I think many people feel that way today. They feel intimidated by the government and the media. They've seen too much abuse of power, and they're afraid that if they open their mouths, if they criticize the government, if they become known as dissidents, the government will retaliate against them. Others are aware of the bias of the controlled news media. They have seen the vicious treatment the media give to anyone who is politically incorrect. Do you remember the way the media hounds tore apart poor Marge Schott, the Cincinnati baseball team owner, after she made a couple of politically incorrect remarks last year? People are afraid of being attacked and hounded by the media if they do or say anything the media bosses don't approve of. They are afraid that the media will cause their employers to fire them or will incite minority criminals to attack them or their families. It has happened too often, and people are frightened. Many people also are discouraged. They see the jungles our cities and our schools have become after decades of destructive immigration and suicidal race policies. They see the terrible condition of our racially integrated armed forces, and they see the decline in the quality of law enforcement in our cities. It seems impossible to them that things can ever be sorted out and cleaned up. They look at the immense power wielded by the media and by the government, and they see no way to overcome that power. They see things getting worse and worse every year, and they conclude that the country cannot be saved, that our people cannot be saved. And so they give up on trying to do anything more than looking out for themselves and their families. They don't want to sacrifice themselves in what they view as a hopeless cause. There are really a lot of people who feel this way. And many of these people are not cowards. They understand the power and the ruthlessness of the government and the media, and they are wary of this power. But they have not let themselves be conquered by unreasonable fears. They just don't believe that anything useful can be done, and so they don't try. If they did believe something could be done, then they might be willing to defy the government and the media and take their chances. There are millions of people like this. They know that things aren't the way they ought to be, even if they don't completely understand why. They aren't cowards, but they aren't inclined to be heroes or martyrs either. They concern themselves almost exclusively with their own security and comforts, yet they aren't entirely without a spark of idealism and altruism. They are ordinary white men and women, moderately perceptive, moderately brave, and capable of becoming moderately idealistic. What these millions of ordinary white men and women need is understanding and hope. Understanding so that they can see what has happened to our country and our people and what needs to be done to set things right. And hope that what needs to be done actually can be done, so that they become willing to take a chance and participate in a struggle for the future that no longer seems hopeless to them. Giving understanding and hope to our people are our two tasks, the two reasons for these American Dissident Voices programs. Of the two, giving understanding is the easier, and it is necessarily the first. Each week, I use this radio broadcast to explain one facet or another of this confusing world around us, so that our people can have a clearer picture of what is happening, what has happened, and what is likely to happen in the future. And this program's sponsor, National Vanguard Books, publishes many books and periodicals which also provide understanding. One of the books published by National Vanguard Books is a novel I wrote more than 20 years ago, The Turner Diaries, in which I tried to look into the future and project where the trends I could see around me in the 1970s would take us. One of the things I saw coming was a great increase in terrorism in the United States as resentment against the government and its policies grew. Another thing I saw coming was a great increase in violence against our women. I predicted the rape of our women by blacks in our minority pampering army under a government unwilling to stop it for fear of being charged with racism. And I have been very gratified by the many people who have written to me and told me that their eyes were first opened when they read the Turner Diaries, that after reading the book, they not only could understand what is happening now, but also could have some inkling of what will happen next. These people who had read my book weren't surprised by the World Trade Center bombing and the Oklahoma City bombing and the Atlanta Olympics bombing and other acts of terrorism which have occurred recently. And they weren't surprised by the revelation of the widespread sexual harassment of white female recruits in our Army by black drill instructors and the unwillingness of the Army brass to stop it before it attracted public attention recently. They had seen these things coming from reading my book. The difficulties we face in providing understanding are primarily economic difficulties. We should have this radio program on every station in America, but airtime is expensive. We would like for every adult white person in America to read the Turner Diaries, but so far, only about 250,000 have. We need to expand our outreach greatly and reach many more of our people with our message, but that will require many more helpers working with me. And it will require much more money. We are slowly doing what needs to be done, but we could do it much faster with more help. Fortunately, we gradually are getting additional help, but we need much, much more. The bigger part of our task is giving our people hope. Understanding what has happened and what needs to be done is not enough for most people. Of course, if all of our people were heroes by nature, then understanding would be enough. They would consider only what it is necessary and proper to do, and then they would be willing to die trying to do it, whether it were possible or not. But most of our people are only slightly heroic. Most people not only need to understand what they should do, they also need to believe that it is possible to do it. And so our task is to persuade them that what we are trying to do is not only necessary and proper, but also possible. Then they will join us. Then we will sweep the enemies of our people, who now seem so powerful, into the trash bin of history. And so, how do we give hope to intelligent, perceptive people who look at the situation around them and see this powerful and corrupt government steamrolling anybody who gets in its way? How do we make them believe that it is possible to successfully oppose such a government? Well, first, we simply focus their attention on some of the things they already know, but perhaps haven't thought enough about. Things like the utter moral corruption of the government, a corruption which robs it and its supporters of any conviction that their cause is just. A morally crippled enemy is a mortally weakened enemy. A government led by a moral cripple like Bill Clinton may still be able to do a lot of damage, punish a lot of its enemies, and keep many people frightened into silence and inaction. But it is vastly more vulnerable than it would be if it were not corrupt, and its corruption increases every year. Certainly, it would be depressing to see support for such a government remaining strong. We kindle hope in patriots by as simple a thing as reminding them of the recent election results, which show the great withdrawal of support from the government, results which show them that fewer than a quarter of the eligible voters voted for Clinton and his government. It is important to continue emphasizing these things because the controlled media deliberately create the false image of great popular support for Clinton and the government. They deliberately create the impression that what is happening is inevitable and unstoppable. The media spokesmen show us great crowds of smiling faces. Everyone is happy, they tell us, because we have more minorities than ever before, more feminists, more proud homosexuals, more equality, more diversity. Sure, we have a few little problems, the media people tell us, but people generally are happy with the way things are going, and if those awful patriots, those awful extremists and dissidents would just keep quiet, everything would be wonderful. I believe that it's important to contradict this lie with the facts, with the real numbers, so that people can have hope, so that they can see that the evil forces destroying our country and our people are not as strong, do not have as much support as the controlled media would have us believe, and that the support they do have is declining. For most people, though, real hope will come not just from realizing that our enemies aren't quite as strong as we had thought they were. It will come more from having a realistic goal before their eyes instead of a hopeless goal. When they look at the mess our enemies have made of America, and they try to figure out how to straighten it out, of course, that seems hopeless to them. Imagine that you are a doctor, and you have two hospital beds before you. In one bed is an old man of mixed race whose health has been ruined from a lifetime of depraved living. An old man riddled with AIDS and a dozen other incurable and infectious diseases. In the other bed is a healthy white infant. You should not waste your time working to make the old man healthy again by trying to undo what cannot be undone. The thing to do is pull the plug on his life support system before his disease has a chance to sicken the healthy white infant in the other bed, and then to devote all of your energy and skill and resources to ensuring that the infant stays healthy, that he doesn't grow up to lead a life like the old man did and fall prey to the same diseases. That can be done. That is something which is possible. Now, the choice facing the ordinary American of goodwill today is not quite that simple, but there are strong similarities. What we need to do is stop worrying about undoing the awful mixed-up mess our enemies have made. Instead, let's let the process of self-destruction proceed as quickly as it will, so that it is finished before it has infected the lives of all of our people. We can't stop it anyway. I mean, what can you do with a city like New York or Washington except try to keep it from spreading by whatever means are necessary? What can you do with a political system like the one in Washington except encourage it to even further excess? Let's not waste our time and energy trying to undo what cannot be undone. Let's pull the plug and focus all of our efforts on salvaging what is still healthy and then ensuring that it stays healthy. That can be done. That is something which is possible. Let the fire which is coming take care of New York and Washington. Let's try to show as many healthy people as we can how to keep from becoming infected, and then how to avoid being burned when the fire comes. Let's show them how to avoid becoming discouraged by enemy propaganda. While the controlled media gloat over the rising rate of racial intermarriage and over the rising number of white families adopting black children and over the darkening of America from the non-white immigration flood, let us keep pointing out to people the numbers that show the declining level of support for this rotten system. While the enemy rejoices over the new destruction he is accomplishing, let us rejoice over the new people whose eyes are being opened by this destruction, and let us reach out to these people. Let us realize that we cannot save everything. We cannot save what has become sick and corrupted. But we can save many of those who are still healthy and who are repelled by the sickness. Let us do a better and better job of that, because in that is our hope for the future. Thanks for being with me again today.